Club Tone Audio. Check it out. Organic Climbing is the official sponsor of Sends and Suffers podcast, and if you didn't know, now you know. I have been using this company's products since before my podcast, since I basically started rock climbing. They're cool, they're rad, they're customizable. You can get bouldering pads, chalk buckets, backpacks, they've got shoes, they've got almost anything you can conceive to make you look fly, to make you functional at the crag. Check out Organic Climbing. Put in Sends and Suffers at your purchase. It helps this podcast out. And really support someone who has been supporting the conception of climbing communities since the beginning. Josh and everyone at Organic is all about making sure communities grow. And that is a huge thing coming from a small company that moves massive, massive mountains. So check out Organic Climbing. Tell them I sent you. Let's get into this episode. Friends and enemies, lovers and haters, welcome to Sends and Suffers podcast. I am your host, Mario Stanley. If you haven't already, please follow, like, and subscribe to Sends and Suffers podcast. Every bit counts, and we would love to hear from you, so take a moment to leave a comment. These go a long way and help others know what they're getting into and how good this show is. If this is one of your favorite podcasts, consider becoming a Patreon. For as little as $5 a month, you are investing in Sends and Suffers podcast, and it's like buying your boy a taco, hanging out, and getting to know the good that is coming your way. Monthly recaps, early show releases, and all the other cool things that we do. Thank you so much for listening to Sends and Suffers podcasts. Breaking news, we have t-shirts. Brand new Sends and Suffers t-shirt drip is out. If you have not gotten yours, please message me. I will get you all the details on social media. Email me at sendsandsuffers@gmail.com. And get yourself looking fly, because it does make the suffering easier when you are in the right drip. And if your suffering's easy, then your sends will be too. Today's episode is a little different. It is a recap of a conversation of my time at the Indoor Climbing Expo, which is an event that is open to the general public, unlike a lot of climbing and expo events in the outdoor world. This conversation was an NGO conversation. It was the SECC, We Climb, and the Global Climbing Initiative. Myself, Kendall, Megan, and Caleb were all there chatting about our respective industries that we work for and that we are passionate about. I hope you enjoy this conversation of NGOs talking about their business, how they got started, and where we're going.
Hey, y'all. Thanks, everybody, for coming. My name's Meg Evans. I'm the executive director of the Southeastern Climbers Coalition. Y'all are here at the Meet a Nonprofit at the Climbing Expo, Indoor Climbing Expo, in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I've got the honor of sitting with these fine gentlemen today, my panel. So to my left here, we have Mario Stanley. I don't know if you guys have watched the HBO show lately, but he was on TV. He was a contestant on The Climb. Is that right?
It was.
The Climb. Okay,
Jason
great.
Jason Momoa, Chris
With
Sharma.
None other than yes. Chris Sharma and,
oh,
and
that's
Jason
right.
Momoa.
Oh, Chris Sharma was there too. But yeah. He probably tuned in to see Mario. So great. Mario also is the host of the Send and Suffers, right, podcast, and then has been doing a lot of work with the Global Climbing Initiative. So I'll let him talk about that more in a minute. In the bright highlighter, orange there. He didn't get the black memo that today. That's all right. The rest of us are black. Is Caleb Timmerman. He is the marketing director for the Southeastern Climbers Coalition, which is the same organization that I work for. Caleb has been known to be one of those that's the hardest worker that you'll ever meet. He makes incredible content for the SEC that gets an entire community of people motivated to get involved. And do the work that we do. And then I don't know if you guys have seen his photos, but my goodness, the guy is just a powerhouse. So I'll let him talk more about
that in a minute.
And then speaking of powerhouses, at the very end there, we've got Kendall Martin. He has, by his own hands, just crafted this incredible organization called We Climb Chat. They focus on getting youth from BIPOC community, underserved communities, into climbing in the Chattanooga area. And I think he's got big plans to maybe, hopefully, expand. I'm coming for you. I want that to come down to Birmingham. So, I'm going to let them all talk a little bit about themselves. Just give us a little bit of an intro. And then I've got some hard-hitting questions that everybody really wants to hear. So let's start with you, Mario. Yeah.
So Mario Stanley, I have been working with the Global Climbing Initiative. The Global Climbing Initiative's mission really is to help empower communities in developing nations or in developing communities in a way that they see fit for themselves. Essentially, a organization, a community, a person will reach out to GCI, Global Climbing Initiative, and they will start a conversation and start a relationship, and then we will talk to them. After a while, we figure out whether they need gear, whether they need education, whether they need services, whether they need just introductions. Mm. But GCI's mission is to empower them to take hold of their own future.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so that's the big thing. And so myself, Genevieve Walker, Scott, and Liz Odende, who is part of Climb Kenya, which GCI, that was one of their first initiatives to help in Africa. We went down to Malawi, Africa. We were there for a month. And in Malawi, climbing has been established for the last 40 years, but it's mainly been bolted and developed by foreigners us. And so we spent a month teaching them how to guide, how to mentoring them, how to bolt, how to do route setting. And Genevieve and myself, we have committed to the next 4 years going back and forth, because what we don't want to be is athletic colonialism. We don't want to come in, we did a thing, great, look at us, this is fun, and then we're gone. And so we're currently working on a documentary that will be released. The release date is February, currently right now is February 23rd.
On my calendar.
It's on the calendar. It will be, the showing is going to be at one of a local gym in DFW.
Cool.
And then we are going to be doing tours throughout the country to raise money to send myself, Genevieve, Scott, and everybody, the whole team back, so we can keep our promise of continuing mentorship and working with that community to know what they need. And we feel like one of the best things to know in order to figure that out is to be boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. And we were the first team ever to be sent out by GCI. Most of the stuff is done just through distribution, through gear, and through relationships. And so that is the Global Climbing Initiative in a kind of a nutshell with my experience with them. I'm going to go ahead and pass the ball.
Yeah. Top that, Caleb. Go for it.
Man, I just think it's so cool how you began that with describing the intent for empowering locals to do their thing and giving them the tools that they need because they are the most knowledgeable about what their needs are.
Oh, absolutely.
And it made me think a lot about the work that we do at the Southeastern Climbers Coalition, because we work in a fairly large area. We work in three states, Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama. And we've been an organization for 30 years. But I think a really key component to the sustainability of our organization is empowering local climbers to safeguard, steward, and care for their local climbing areas in their cities, in their counties, in their regions. We have primarily been a volunteer organization for 30 years. We've only recently, in the past 5 years, had staff, paid staff. And the reason we've been able to operate for that long at that level is because of an individual who comes to the SEC and says, hey, I care about this climbing area. I want to do something about improving access. I want to do something about cleaning it up for the community. I have the energy to put into this. Help me. And then we have the resources to help them, whether that's funding for gear, for bolt replacement, whether that's knowledge of how to clean graffiti off of a boulder. Oh. We get that question a lot.
Big. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So all that to say, I piggyback off of what you said. Like that is the sustainable strategy. That is how you impact a community, whether it's local or international, is empowering individuals who have the fire to do it and who care deeply about their local climbing area.
Yeah.
So I'll circle back to the original question. I'm Caleb Timmerman. I'm the marketing director and chief stoke officer of the SEC. I've worked for the Southeastern Climbers Coalition for almost 3 years now.
Is that the official title, Cheap Stoke?
It is my given title.
Yes. Okay,
I just want my self-given title.
Yes. Can I see that on a plaque?
It's not on a business card, but it's on his social media.
Yeah, yeah. I say it enough that people know it.
Yes, people know it.
I donate, so can we put that on his business card?
Yeah. When you donate, you can specify, and it goes into what's called a restricted fund.
That's right.
And it can only be used for that. So,
don't
Mario, next time you donate to the SEC, can't wait for that to come into my inbox. It'll be great. So my work with the SEC primarily is around communication, education, and just rallying the community together at every opportunity when we have a cause to do so. So whether that's trail days or fundraisers, I make sure that the community knows about it and comes together to, take care of our Southeastern sandstone granite.
Great.
Yeah.
Hit it, Kendall.
Man, this is a lot of pressure.
I mean, honestly, I think this is a solid trick.
That was good. For
this is a solid flow. Like,
you are
the river of life is flowing, my brother.
It's kind of like start off is crazy, like hearing how long each and everybody's like organization has been around, because we're a very, very new.
Yeah.
I started my organization in college, but hearing about like an organization being around for 40 years and 30 years, it's like that's where we want to be at a certain point, where we're able to be sustainable and continue to grow things. Like I tell everybody I meet, is like, I want to go to the point where I'm not needed anymore. Like I can go off into like the sunset and be climate still a thing, right? We're at the point now where we obviously have to have a lot of boots on the ground, where we're doing a lot of things. And then also, quick side note, athletic colonialism, that is a bar. That was crazy. I was like, I'm going to use that.
It's yours.
That came up honestly in the moment.
Genevieve and I were talking and it just like flowed out and Genevieve stopped and she was like, "Oh, whoa. We just did a thing."
I was like, I'm going to use that.
Please do. It's yours.
Especially because this is a good transition a little bit. And with what WeClimb does, it's easy to kind of do that, right? I mean, you see it at like local schools where there's coaches like recruiting everybody and all that type of stuff, which is great. Have a sports program, that's awesome. But if that's the only thing you're providing to these kids, you're not providing them anything. But say a kid breaks their leg, what are they going to do after that? Experiencing like just as climbers in general, we get injured all the time. And there's a moment where there's a lull in your life and you're just sitting there and maybe not be talking to friends as much or whatever. And you're just wondering, oh, my entire life was climbing for blank years. What am I going to do now? I mean, and so kind of bringing it back to what WeClimb does. We don't fix any broken legs, but we do is like our mission is using climbing as a tool to introduce kids to the outdoors. I tell people all the time, if you take a kid outside and they say, man, I absolutely hate climbing. This is the worst thing I've ever experienced. We're like, that sucks that you don't like climbing, but it's amazing that now you know you don't like this thing. How about you try mountain biking? How about you try this thing? It's literally to show them that there's a world within within the outdoors in general. I wouldn't have begun mountain biking if it wasn't for climbing. I wouldn't have learned about paddleboard. I wouldn't have learned about a lot of things if I didn't go outside and climb. Just because the people within the climbing world do a lot of different things. And so, like I said, that is our mission, but there's plenty of other things that we try to do and introduce to our kids. And just naturally, the way our program works with us partnering with programs and schools and all that type of stuff, we're naturally diversifying the outdoors. And so it's very weird because people always ask, like, how do you diversify the outdoors? I want to say it's not that difficult, but it really isn't. You look at where they are and you go there. So I had to mention, a lot of people are kind of scared to go there. But like I said, with a lot of the programs we work with, they're naturally doing what we want to do as well, but in another facet. So like one of the organizations we work with, Bridge Outdoors, they're basically kind of like an after-school program that works with Delwood and East Brainerd kids. And their group of kids are just naturally diverse because of the school that there are. I think, I'm not going to spit statistics because I've completely forgot all of them. But I do know that like there's a lot large BIPOC population at Brainerd and Delwood. And so because they're an after-school program that takes kids outside, they naturally do that. And so they reached out to us and said, hey, we heard you take kids climbing. We want them to do that. And so that's kind of like a little bit of what we do and kind of how we do make outdoors diverse in a very simple format as of right now.
And such a, and such a big thing to be talking about. Mm-hmm. Y'all were all kind of talking about where you are now, where you dream to be. And that got me thinking about, I love to hear about the origin story. How did it begin? Take us back to the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Of how that kind of came to be. So I'd love to hear you guys elaborate a little bit on how the organizations respectively that you all represent got organized and how they got activated, how they began. I know SEC, for example, started in a shoebox. So hearing about that story and even just as simple as that, maybe just an idea that you had, Kendall, or whatever the moment was, I'd love to hear about that. And we can kind of start with you, Mario, if you're ready.
Yeah. So I want to first say Veronica is the one who started GCI. I did not. I mean, this pretty face does a lot, but not that much, you know. But so honestly, if you guys really want to hear the full story of how that started, I actually did a previous podcast with Veronica at the last CWA and when we were in Pittsburgh and we go really into detail, but we'll paraphrase this. Veronica was originally on track to work for the State Department. That's originally what she wanted to do. And anyone who really follows global impact, global work, things like that, you know that like large governments are completely, utterly dysfunctional. And it's just the way it works. Surprise.
Breaking news here at Indoor Climbing Expo.
and we cracked the case on international global politics.
Go ahead.
In that conversation, one of the things that she came to realize that like if she wanted to have legitimate impact working in the State Department, you would either have to be at the very top of the food chain, I mean extremely top, like next to the homie himself in the White House, or you have to have you're probably one of these billionaire donors, And then shortly around that time, her love for climbing really started turning into a passion. And she kind of had the idea that maybe these two can merge. And she wanted to do it in a way where she wanted to secure that the funds and the resources go directly to the communities at hand. Like, let's cut out the middleman as much as possible, or let's make the introductions as much as possible. And I think that was something that was immensely important to her. And then she started cultivating a team of people, some people based here in Chattanooga, some people based in California. Most of the team operates remotely. And she found people that kind of have this shared vision. And then over through a lot of tenacity, gall, and gumption, she now runs a very young nonprofit that runs with a decent budget and operates, don't quote me on this, but it's either 26 or 32 countries.
Ooh, whoa, whoa.
Like GCI has,
they're making moves.
Money moves, yeah. Playboy, money moves. I'm telling you, and that was one of the things that blew my mind. And I was like, how do you operate that in so many countries? And it blows other people's minds too. But I think also too, this is kind of goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning, in the introduction. It's like, we're operating in the capacity that these communities need the resources. Sometimes the resources is really just a bunch of approach shoes so they can go off because they have access to drills. They have access to bolting. Mm-hmm. But they don't have access to appropriate footwear. They don't have access to drills. Or they don't have access to, but they can do the rest of the work. Mm. And that qualifies as work. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that I was so gravitated towards with GCI is you're really putting the power in the community's hands. And that is the origin story of them. They want to empower communities to do what that community needs to do. And who are we in America or any other, first world country, whatever you want to call it nowadays, who are we to determine what is the work? We have no right and we just got to get out of the way. Our job is to facilitate. And I think that in a nutshell is like how GCI got started. I'm sure there's a lot of other details that I left out
can plug the podcast again.
Yeah, just listen to the episode. I don't remember exactly which one it is, but I'll pull it up in a minute.
And plug the documentary because, Veronica does a just bangarang job.
Oh, yeah. Love that.
in being interviewed for the documentary.
Yeah, because I keep on forgetting about it. I've been so busy staring at this documentary so much.
You're so close to it.
Way too close, but not close enough. But yeah, she goes into that. In the documentary that we're releasing, it's going to be called Climb Malawi. But she goes into the details of how this organization started and what we're trying to do. And
I do believe like what Genevieve and myself, Scott and Liz did is kind of the pinnacle of what they're wanting to do. And I do know we want to do more of it.
Mm.
But, you know, this is something that I kind of wrestled with actually, and to kind of go on a side note, and yeah, I'll stop after this. But I wrestled with this a little while ago because like we were having a meeting where she's like, you know, we really love this documentary that you're doing. We really love this work that you're doing. And we really think this is something really valuable for GCI. And I was like, cool, this is excited. I really want to do this in other countries. I really want to do this to think. And then I remember after I got off the phone with her, I was like, I just switched. I started now talking about what I want to do in other countries. And I just switched. Yeah. And I was like, I think what I need to do is, and this is something that's important to me, shooting my first documentary. I want to go into this with the skills of like understanding that I don't know everything. Mm. And so I am bootstrapping it and I am kind of figuring it out as I'm going along, knowing that that's probably how these other countries want to do. And what I really want to do is teach them how to produce their own documentary, produce their own thing.
You have a second origin there.
Yeah. And just like, but like, I have to remember to get out of the way.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, it's a really hard thing for us to do when we're a country, when we're a community of givers, when we're a community of givers, it's really hard for us to get out of the way.
Step aside.
And so that's just like a little random tidbit on the whole thing. But that's kind of how the organization started in a nutshell. And now I think they are the nicest 800-pound unicorn in the room.
Nice. Caleb, I know, you know, for everyone's benefit, would love to hear you talk a little bit more about how the SEC got started right here in Chattanooga.
Yeah. So the way I always tell the story of the origin of the SEC is kind of a two-part tale. So part one is here in Chattanooga. There's a climbing area called Sunset Rock. It's basically at the pinnacle of Lookout Mountain. And it's known as pretty incredible, high-quality trad climbing area. Has been climbed for many years, but in the early 90s, we started to have access issues because local residents had this impression of climbers as riffraff and troublemakers didn't want them around, basically. So they...
I don't call it trouble, but I like being a riffraff.
Yeah, yeah. Riffraff.
Can that be my rap name?
Yes, yes. That is my gift to you. So local residents started advocating for closures to prevent climbers from recreating at Sunset Rock. And climbers didn't like that, so we responded with, what do we need to do to show you that we are good stewards and deserve to be here, basically? What do we need to do to show up and earn our right to be here? So Sunset Rock is on a national park. It's managed by a national park system. So the national park rangers basically said, show up for trail days. Kind of like, help us build out this area. And that'll show us that you guys actually want to be here. And so people showed thousands of hours of volunteering, so much so that we basically earned the good graces of the National Park Service and the rangers. And so they basically went to bat for us and said, no, like, this is a legitimate user group. They deserve to be here climbing on this mountain. So that was in 1993. Fast forward, after this initial rallying of climbers together, like them realizing, oh, like we can be effective as a group when we come together. That was kind of the birth of the SEC as an organization. Fast forward to 2001, we have a climbing area in Atlanta, Georgia called Boat Rock. Classic granite bouldering in the heart of one of the largest metropolitan areas in the world. It's just smack dab in the middle of this residential area. And it's been climbed for decades. There's a rich history of outdoor climbing competitions there. But in the early 2000s, a developer bought up the property and started destroying the boulders, literally with dynamite. There were explosions and there's heavy machinery tearing these boulders apart. And the climbing community, again, rallied together to say, this is not okay. These are precious to us. We value our recreation and our climbing here. What can we do to protect and save these boulders? So at the time, they tried the strategy again of working with them as a partner, working with them and trying to work out a deal, but the developers were not interested. So it came to a point where the only strategy left was to just buy the property outright. And that was something that had never been done before by any local climbing organization. And so there was really no template for how to move forward.
So the Southeastern Climbers Coalition came together and said, all right, we're going to fundraise and we're going to protect this boulder field by purchasing it. And we were successful. We bought our first property ever in 2001, Boat Rock. And so that really solidified us, I think, in our mission of we exist to preserve access to outdoor climbing in the Southeast for present and future generations. Mm-hmm. And that just started this snowball effect. All right, how do we recreate this in climbing areas throughout our region, Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama? So the early founders of the SCC basically had a shopping list. And in the decades that have followed, we've slowly chipped away to create sustainable, professional, safe access to climbing all over bouldering areas, sport climbing areas, track climbing areas. And we've just kept up the work till today.
Mm-hmm. Kendall, I am very excited because I don't actually know if I've heard this tale on how We Climb really started.
Really?
I don't think I've actually heard this. And so I'm really excited to hear it.
Yeah.
So and thanks, Caleb, for that.
It kind of all started off as like a school project, loosely. Yeah.
Get out.
Yeah. And so obviously the intention of the school project wasn't to start an entire organization, but the project was to find an organization in your community that's doing good. And mm-hmm. my major was marketing. And so mm-hmm. it was like create a marketing plan for that organization. And it was like a PowerPoint and all that type of stuff. And so there's a school called Chattanooga Preparatory School in Chattanooga. And their mission basically is to have mentorship is basically the central theme of their organization. So every kid at that school has a mentor that they can go to and talk to. And my dad was also a board member at that school. So I was like, Dad, that's a pretty cool school idea, blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, could I use chat prep as like my subject for my project? I also need an A, so this would be helpful if he said yes. So and so he said, yeah, of course. And so my dad wound up actually speaking at the school a week of the project being announced. And so I was like, all right, cool. I'll just go to the school with you while you like speak. I'll talk to the teachers, the organizers, the founders, all that type of stuff to learn their mission, whatever. Talk to them. Learned about all the things that they wanted to do, the things that they were doing and whatnot. And I wound up talking to one of the coaches and like, we're going to start a football team, a basketball team, blah. Like, we want to be on pace with Macaulay. If you're not in Chattanooga, Macaulay is a private, it's a very expensive private school that's in Chattanooga. It has amazing athletics, academics, all that type of stuff. So they're saying, we want to be on par with Macaulay and the Baylors and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you guys talk about all these sport programs that you're doing. Are you going to start like an outdoor program or a climbing program like the Baylors and Macaulay's? And they had a blank look on their face. They're like, no, we didn't really think about that. I was like, that's cool. It's fine. And so because of the person I am, I went home.
So Kendall said, I'll do it.
Yeah, basically. And so I went home. I created an entire business plan that was, I don't know, however many pages long of how I was going to start an outdoor program at Chattanooga Preparatory School. I looked at the business plan. I was like, this is not really an outdoor program anymore. This is basically an organization.
Mm.
But I still went to Chattanooga Preparatory School. I was like, hey, I created this business plan on how I can start an outdoor program after school. They're like, that's cool, but we don't really know you. And also, like, it'd be kind of weird if we don't really know you and you're taking our kids out climbing.
I do remember you telling me that.
Yeah. And so I was like, that makes sense. I'm not mad at that. And so they're like, you need to get a whole bunch of stuff together before you're able to take our kids out. And so that's when I went through the process of, like, talking to a whole bunch of folks, learning that I need, like, an LLC, you know, 501c. That is, like, everything. Mm. And funny enough, and y'all know Andrea, she was kind of helped the process of that because she was executive director at the time of the SCC.
Mm-hmm.
And so had a meeting with her. Like, I had previous meetings with a whole bunch of other folks because I wound up picking a lot of people's brains of how do I start an organization? I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm only 22. And so everybody, like, had a whole bunch of meetings. I had a meeting with Andrea. Fantastic meeting. And she was like, we're going to do this, this, and this. We're going to set up a donation page. I was like, this is great. But I was like, every other meeting is probably not going to happen. Within a week, she had our GoFundMe page up. I was like, well, people are donating now. I'm getting people's money. So I kind of have to do something. So I was like, all right, cool. And so we went through the process of getting an LLC. Because like I said, I didn't know how much money it costs to start a nonprofit. And so create an LLC. And also before that too, just to kind of get the ball rolling on our entire organization, I took my little brother Kingston out which I think all of you guys have met. Mm-hmm. He's a very hard kid to not forget. Uh-huh. So I wound up taking him out climbing to like Synergy outside or whatever. And people were like, oh, who's this kid? I was like, he's a We Climb kid, not my little brother, wink. And so through that process, it kind of had me learn a lot of things because there's a lot of times I messed up with him, but sure. Luckily it was my little brother, so I can mess up with my little brother versus somebody else's kids. So like,
you're my guinea pig.
Yeah. So like a very good example is that his parents don't allow him to eat pork. I completely forgot about that. And so we wound up getting breakfast and he ate bacon because he was like, I want some bacon. I was like, yeah, that's fine. And then we go, I take him home. His parents are like, oh, so what did you eat for breakfast? He was like, bacon, eggs. They're like, what? And I was like, oh
no.
Yeah, they're like, Kendall, you're lucky that
write
we love
that down
you
in your journal.
But don't you ever do that again. So I was like, all right, I'm glad it was him instead of like some other kid's parents, right? So learned that process. And like I said, a whole bunch of other things. But yeah, like I said, the origins of it started off as a school project. And then, like I said, talked to a lot of people throughout the community in climbing and just tried to like, basically, I'm learning everything as I go. Mm-hmm. And so I'll say the idea of We Climb started roughly 5 years or so ago. Mm-hmm. It being a legal entity and like everything being legitimate started in 2020. Because everybody.
Congratulations on that. I mean, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a lot. Like I said, we're still working out a lot of things. We're very new. And just, yeah. So that's where it kind of all started, was just school project. And it was, like I said, the intent wasn't even to start an organization, mm-hmm. really. It was just, I wanted to start an outdoor program at a school. And I didn't really want to be a coach or anything like that. I was like, I just want to start this thing so kids can climb at this school. Because mm-hmm. they're a very diverse school as well. So mm-hmm. I was like, through me starting an outdoor program at this school, I can also diversify outdoors as well. And like, what's funny, like I said, we partnered with Chattanooga Prep where we work with some of their kids, but it's funny, it's like they're not even the main partners of We Climb anymore. Mm. And so it's a very weird origin story, I'll say the least, because like I said, if I would have known about it transitioning to organization, I probably would have given this idea to somebody else and said, hey, could you do this thing that I think is awesome? Who has like all the expertise and all that type of stuff. But, like I said, it's cool going through like the learning process of how to start an organization, the do's and don'ts and all that type of stuff. Because like, with that said, it's a journey. Everything's a journey in life, mm-hmm. right? So it's really cool kind of seeing how the community has like rallied around We Climb and just the idea itself. Mm-hmm. Because, and also another reason why I started We Climb too was for the fact that Chattanooga is one of the meccas of climbing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And Chattanooga itself is a very diverse city. Mm-hmm. Like if you would have went anywhere else in Tennessee, I'd be like, oh, this makes sense on why there's not that many Black climbers. But mm-hmm. in Chattanooga, out of all places, right. It does not make sense. Mm-hmm. Especially with how many places are close within Chattanooga. We went to Ovehatchee today. Mm-hmm. 5 minutes down the road from where I live. Mm. And so with how close everything is here, how diverse Chattanooga is, it just does not make any sense. Mm-hmm. And so, and then when I was starting the process of like researching nonprofits and organizations, when I looked up climbing organizations that take kids out climbing, basically, I looked at it and I was like, there's no organizations like this. And mm-hmm. we're in, at the time, 2020. I was like, this doesn't make any sense at all. Yeah. It's like, you see on Instagram posts all the time, diversified outdoors, right. but like nobody's doing it. That doesn't make any sense.
Right, mm-hmm. yeah.
And so, at least, like I said, there's other larger organizations right. that have their
but
mission.
But in your community, in your town, nobody's doing
yeah.
it.
I was like, that doesn't make any sense at all. Right. And it's like, I'm not the strongest climber. I'm not the best climber at all. But I was like, there wasn't anybody with some sort of like reputation behind them. They're like, we're going to push this.
Yeah.
So I was like, mm-hmm. I'm going to talk to as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how it all started.
I can't help but see a very common theme here between the organizations where there was kind of this one individual or one person that kind of sparked was the catalyst for kind of incredible change. And so that makes me wonder about how you all got involved, not only in climbing, but then also kind of got involved with the organizations. So I mean, Kendall, yours is pretty clear cut and dry. You are the organization. But I would love to hear you guys just talk about how you got into climbing and how that morphed into wanting to do something beyond just climbing. Mm-hmm. I've always kind of said for myself, when folks ask me, like, what does it mean to be a good climber? I don't think about grades. I think about the ethics. I think about how I'm giving back. I think about that portion. So I'd love to know how you guys got into climbing and then how it morphed into this give back mentality of kind of improving your own communities.
Okay. I first want to give a big shout out to the Hassler, the Hustler, Andrea.
Yes.
Because
real quick.
Just because like I met Andrea a while ago at the International Climbers Festival, and she is a phenomenon, and I'm sure she's probably enraged at me bragging about her right now. But I think
who snitched.
I think she's probably one of the most underrated sleepers in the advocacy community in the world. And I don't care what anybody else says or that because she helped me a lot in like kind of like really kind of forming a little bit of my business and my podcast. She's helped with you. I know she's been a big influencer in your life.
She hired me.
Yeah. Like, so like, I just,
she told
like,
me to apply.
I just want to go ahead and say, like, if we erect a statue for her, it should be done. But like,
if
there's
and if everyone's not up to date on their Access Fund membership, because Andrea Hassler works for the Access Fund. So yes. Go ahead and up your membership for the Access Fund.
So yeah. But with that being said, I just felt like once you said that and I was thinking about you and I was like, this just has to be said because
all of us are here because
yes. Yeah, yes. Truly. And it's like, you know, and you just even said there's like reoccurring themes. And I think she's a person who's been thread through a lot of webs.
Yeah.
But with that being
let's
said,
hear about you. Yeah.
I got into climbing. Actually, I got into climbing. I took a girl on a date. And friends and enemies, lovers and haters, I hope you are enjoying that episode. And I know you hate me before I'm ending, but you know what would make that hate fade away would be a brand new t-shirt that sends and suffers drip. $30, $5 for shipping and handling. Shoot me a message and I will get that information out to you. And you gotta ask yourself, were you just suffering when I ended that? That means your send is so close, because if you're not suffering, are you really sending at all?